In this episode, I set out to discuss dividends, and I did that very thing with a Peter Greshens, and I had fun doing it, and I hope you enjoy listening. Thank you. Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And in this short series on dividends, I try to expand your understanding, increase your knowledge on how one might look at and consider the dividends paid by mutual life insurance company on a participating policy. I think I did a fair job. I made an effort, and we were going to end this in three parts. And then, of course, my mind continues to think. And after we recorded the three parts, I'm thinking, well, I should have said this, or I left this out, or I wasn't clear here, or I made a misstatement there, which as much talking as I do, I'm going to make misstatements. They're not intentional, and I try to avoid them. And sometimes I do a better job than others. So I have a track to run on, so it may help me. I hope it helps me to stay on point and avoid, wandering off the reservation, chasing rabbits, going down rabbit holes, and, having long digressions. We'll see if I can make that happen. I want you to know I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate all of the encouraging comments and emails and communications. Just thank you. I appreciate you. And so I want to start on the three parts, right? We tried to get it done in three parts. I tried to get it done in three parts. Almost did it. But in part one, I was sharing on dividend elections, or the dividend options, that an owner has, and as to what they can do with the dividend. I receive it in cash, and so I went over the dividend elections. Have the dividends paid in cash, number one. Number two, have the dividends paid into the paid-up additions, which is what we should all be doing, in my humble opinion, when we're practicing the infinite banking concept. Number three was to have the dividend to reduce the premium. We talked about that. Nelson did that for 15 years in his 1959 State Farm policy, and it has a result on the policy when you do that. And then the fourth dividend election is to remain at interest. Right. So you just, life insurance company, you keep the dividend, put it in an interest bearing account and let it earn interest. That interest that it earns is taxable. But then I talked about the fifth dividend election, or I mentioned it, but I didn't say what it was. And not all companies have the fifth dividend election, or option is what it's called, dividend election number five. The fifth dividend election is, if you elect the fifth, if you have that option, the fifth dividend option or the fifth dividend election, it would buy term insurance. Okay. And then I mentioned the sixth, and I think I did a fair job on that, the sixth dividend election. I don't think there are any companies that remain in business today that have that option, but it was to reduce a loan. And then I mentioned that, whether you have the sixth dividend election option to purchase term, to reduce the loan, there are mechanical steps that you can do very simply, very easily, to reduce the loan with the value of the dividend. Okay. Clear? Okay. All right. And then let me say that if you want to reduce the loan, there are other ways to do that. Have the dividend paid into the PUA. You withdraw from the PUA to reduce the loan. That has its own results, and I think I speak of that in the paid-up additions one or two. And I'll review those again because I'm probably going to produce a PUA part three. So if I didn't share that method of reducing a loan in part one or two, I will clearly get it done in PUA part three. And I think that was somewhere around the 21-minute mark on part one. Okay. And actually, I'm going to go to part two. In part two, I talked about the basis of an investment, the basis of a life insurance policy. Life insurance is not an investment. And I kind of talked about the characteristic of an account. If I have an investment account, the money that I put in, that's my basis. It grows. Hopefully, if it does grow, I'm taxed on the gains. And whether it's ordinary income, capital gains tax, whatever the character is. But I wanted to make the point that in qualified plans, traditional qualified plans, IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, that you're putting money into those typically pre-tax, with pre-tax dollars, right? So there is no basis when you take income from IRAs, 401ks, traditional IRAs, 401ks, 403bs. It's 100% taxable because it was funded with pre-tax dollars, okay? And then somewhere along about the 6.5 minute mark, and I don't know where all the minute marks are on these previous episodes. I've tried to make a cursory effort to point them out, but somewhere along the 6.5 minute mark on part two, I talked about blended PUAs. I know I'm talking about blended PUAs. I even talked about structure, and this is a dividend series. It's meant to be, speaking on the dividend, right? But the blended PUA comes in, and I think I did a fair job with that as far as there's a blend of term. There's a term component with the PUA. They're blended together, blended PUA. And then, talked about how some of the annual renewable term is a component on the term. Others level term for time periods, 10 years, 5 years, 15 years, whatever. But we all know that the cost of term goes up every year. Every year, you get closer to mortality, the risk of graduating increases, so the cost of term goes up every year, okay? So the end result of a blended PUA, the mechanics are a little bit different, but the results are so similar, you get the same results, all right? And there's another work on blended PUAs, and it'll be similar to this dividend series, and I'll talk more about that. But I do want to say, I want to point out that, which I didn't say there, when the dividend is in a blended PUA, the dividend, the majority of the time, the dividend must pay for the cost of the term before, and if there's any remainder, it's applied to the PUA, the cash value of the PUA, okay? And on the majority of the time I'm speaking, you can't change that. You can't call the company and say, hey, let me send you a check for the price of that term and have the dividend paid into the PUA. No. Not going to do it. Not going to let you pay the term separately. The dividend is allocated, dedicated to the cost of the term. And, on the blended PUA work, it's like, yeah, the cost of the term goes up. What if the dividend goes down? Well, there's a natural result of that. And if that wasn't covered in part one and part two on the PUA, it will be covered in part three. And, excuse me, I think I'm still in number two, part two. I'm talking about the PUA, the dynamic PUA, the dividend is being paid from a base, and the dividend is being paid from the PUA, and some companies have one, two, or three PUAs. Maybe you have one, two, or three PUA riders on your policy. Maybe you don't. And I think that's gold. Somewhere around I start in the 5.4 minute mark, and it goes all the way up to 8 minute mark, somewhere around there. I was trying to make the point that the dividend, I think I use the terminology, the dividend is greater on the base, right? And then I got off into structure too, where you want the majority of the premium to go to the PUA and the smallest premium possible to go to the base, because you have, artificial liquidity is what I call it in the early years. It's there, you can use it, but it has results. It has results when you mutilate a policy like that. My terminology, I'm not apologetic for my terminology. My point here is that whole idea and thought process of a percentage of the premium being paid to a base and the percentage of a premium being paid to the PUA is a rate versus volume argument, dilemma, thought process. And it also applies when I'm saying, and I said, the dividend on the base is greater, therefore you'd want a greater, that's another, there's multiple reasons you'd want a higher base premium than these atrocious 90-10, 85-15 type structured policies. Because the base dividend is more powerful. I use the terminology greater. Like I said, it's more powerful. It is larger. And me saying that's very broad. I'm not putting up a bunch of illustrations that are manipulated for you to see. You know, I may do that later, put up illustrations, not to manipulate you, but to convey my points, to support what I'm saying. Because you can't look at an illustration. You see one dividend on every life insurance illustration. Every year they illustrate a dividend, right? And there's no way for anyone to see or to see a difference. How much of that dividend came from the base policy? How much of that dividend came from the base policy's PUA? How much of that dividend came from the dynamic PUA rider that you put on there? The dynamic, you know, you can go up or down in premium, catch up provision. You know, how much of that dividend was paid from the single premium or the one-time premium or whatever they call the dividend riders? All of the companies call them something different. All of them have one or more. Some have three. Each one of those components of a policy, the base policy, every PUA pays a dividend. There's no way for a consumer to look, or even an agent, to look at a life insurance illustration and determine what dividend is greater from what component. It can't be seen. But let me say, it can be seen. If it can be seen, it will be seen on annual statements. All right, and not every company even does that. Only a few companies break out. You know, here's the total dividend. The base paid this dividend amount. The PUA from the base policy paid this dividend amount. The dynamic PUA, whatever the name is, paid this amount in a dividend. And this other dividend or this other PUA rider that you have on there paid this. And all of these dividends from each of those sources total a total dividend. Very few companies even break that out on a annual statement. But when you have a company that does that, this, I'm telling you, you can see it very clearly. When I say broadly, the dividend is greater on the base. It's more powerful on the base. I've said it many times. The power of a life insurance policy structured for the infinite banking concept. The power in the early years is in the PUA. The power in the later years is in the base. My intent is to demonstrate that visually with entire illustrations. Where it goes, client only, I don't know. But to support my point, right? And the underlying overarching point that I want to make, that in it of itself is a rate versus volume, because the dividend is the rate. The rate is the rate. The dividend rate the insurance company declared is the dividend interest rate that they declared. And if they declare a 5% dividend, it's a 5% dividend on the base, the policy's PUA, the base policy's PUA, all the additional PUA riders you put on there or not. The rate is 5%. The volume of the dividend paid from and on the base is a greater volume than the dividend on and from PUAs. And my point there is it's just another rate versus volume. All right. Okay. Nelson, Becoming Your Own Banker, 5th edition, page 17. The problem, it never seems to dawn that the volume of interest is the real issue, not the annual percentage rate. Now, I know he's talking about loans, where I'm quoting from. I understand that. But that absolutely applies to to my example here, when I'm saying the volume of the dividend from the base is greater than the volume of the dividend from the PUA. All right. Okay. And then I think I misquoted him somewhere along about 13-minute mark. You know, I said that most people's understanding, I'm misquoting Nelson. I said that Nelson said often that most people's understanding of life insurance is based on someone else's misunderstanding. That's a misquotation. I know he's misquoted all over the internet and all over. I get it. And I'm not looking to be perfect. You know, I understand that perfect is the enemy of progress. Perfect is the enemy of good. I understand that. I recognize that. I respect that. But Nelson said many, many times, and I wholeheartedly agree with him, is most people's understanding of life insurance is based on someone else's misconception. And I think I got into the process and in that part, you know, but that's the correct quote. I just wanted to correct myself. Okay. And then, you know, here's one thing that I left out that I wanted to say. It's relatively unknown, right? Mutual life insurance companies must pay a minimum dividend. Talk about, you know, people saying, hey, you're getting off in the weeds here. No, that's getting off in the weeds to me. That's, for me, that would be what I would consider getting off into the weeds. You know, going through all the calculations, the minimum requirements that a life insurance, mutual life insurance company must pay in the form of a dividend. So I get it. There's plenty of weeds out there that we can wander off in. And as I got into structure, since I've got off into structure, you know, I just want to say that, you know, structure, we're manipulating a life insurance policy by adding the PUA rider, and then we're trying to add the ability to pay a higher premium in a PUA rider, and it requires today term insurance that, you know, it wasn't required. I said it. Nelson never used term. He didn't use term in his book. There's not a single illustration in there that has a term component to it. But I don't want to jump over the point. I want to press the issue that a dividend-paying life insurance policy structured as Nelson Nash encouraged, right? The life insurance policy, the mutual structure of the insurance company, the structure of a policy has just the whole life policy. You don't even have to manipulate the structure. The mutual structure of the insurance company and the structure of a mutual whole life policy has all of the characteristics that are required for you to become your own banker. Okay, and I just want to press that point. You know, I'm all for high cash value. I'm all for that. I balk when it gets to the point where you're jeopardizing the integrity of a policy, whether you can see that on a page or not this year, whether you can see that on an illustration next year or 5 years from now. When you do jeopardize the integrity of a policy, even though you can't see it, you will experience it in the future. And then you will have to take action to avoid max and avoid those things, or be disappointed not being able to pay a legitimate base premium. You know, whenever you get 60 or 70, you have all this income coming in. Let's say you retired, you've got $25,000 to $40,000 in Social Security income. You know, you've got all the savings and investments you've done over your lifetime, and now you're going to make those things produce income. Maybe you have some rental properties. Maybe you're selling a business, a practice, and you've got a note, you're carrying a note, and all that income, you know, it's all taxable income too, and you got to put it to work somewhere. And you happen to have a little old life insurance policy that you have the contractual right to pay a premium on. Right now, maybe we're going so far out in age, the term component's not there. You can't pay the big PUA premium that you originally could. So now you're just the only opportunity you have on the policy, in my example, is you got to pay base premium. So you got all this income, $100,000, $80,000, $200,000, whatever it is. I hope you have the largest. I hope your income in passive income time is bigger than you can even imagine today. Okay. I hope you do very well. I hope it's very large. But I got to use numbers, right? Okay. So let's say I have a $200,000 income or a $100,000 income, and I can only pay a $2,000 base premium. Man, I got to put all that money somewhere, and it's going to wind up in somebody else's bank. Whatever it is, I don't spend. Now, that base premium, you know, you pay in $2,000 in my example, excuse me, it'll have a 10, 8, 10, 15 times increase, right? Put 2,000 in. There's a $20,000 increase. That's beautiful. That's great. But you got all that other income that you have no place to put it. You don't have the contractual right to continue paying a premium, or you only have the contractual right paying this little bitty old premium. When, I don't know, a properly structured policy in this case might have been a $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 base. I don't know. If that was $2,000 base and it's too small, probably should be around a $10,000 base, ballpark figures. I don't know. Now I pay a $10,000 premium and there's a $100,000 increase. Oh, wait, but let's say the rate is not the same, right? Let's say the rate is smaller because I'm paying a higher base premium. Are you with me? So maybe it's not a 10 times increase. Maybe it's only a 16 or 20 times increase, 10 times. Maybe it's only an 8 times increase. So I pay in 10 and there's 80 compared to I can only pay in 2, you know, and there's $20,000 increase. The rate may be higher over there, but I get a pretty good rate here, and I have a substantial volume. I know that's too far out into the future to think. I know. I get it. Okay. I just wanted to bring that out. So, and make the point that just the structure of a mutual company and a well-structured policy, you have all the characteristics that are required to control the banking function. And I think ultimately that's what we all want to do. Oh, well, if we're reading Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, I would say yes, that's what we all want to do. Okay. So even though the dividends are not guaranteed, you know, I pointed out, they become massive over time. The dividends become massive over time. Talked about his 1949 State Farm policy. And the point that I want to make here, even though you have all these dividend elections, you don't want to do anything. If you can avoid it, you do not want to do anything that will diminish the dividend. You don't want it to reduce premium like he did in the first 15 years. He would tell you that. He told you he made a mistake, right? And as soon as he became a licensed life insurance agent in 1964, that was 15 years after 1959, he understood what was going on with the life insurance policies. So the first thing he did was change the dividend election. But he was, you know, practicing his own, being his own banker, right? He financed several things, talks about some of it in Building Your House of Wealth. Others he doesn't really, it's not written about, but, you know, I think I've talked about it, several things that he has financed, right? Okay. And the one that when he finances the property, you know, from his airplane pilot that had a need for capital, right? It buys the land. And then shortly later, sometime later, the pilot just, you know, had a problem. He had a capital problem. That was his problem. And he needed more capital. So Nelson shortened the note. I mean, just, okay, I don't want to digress. But you shouldn't do anything, if you can avoid it, to minimize the power, the compounding power, the accumulating power, the velocity of the dividend accumulation. And there are many things that you can do to avoid doing that. If you're in a jam or if something changes and, you know, unexpected, what have you, you don't want to do anything. If you can avoid it, you don't want to do anything to interrupt that exponential compounding curve of your policy. I know there's always the outlier that, you know, exceptions to everything. I get it. But since I brought up his book, Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, right? Let's see what, and it'll come up in a graphic later. It's building your warehouse of wealth. You know, the grassroots method of avoiding fractional reserve banking. Think about it. And I talked about that, even quoted, even read my endorsement in the front of it, which I was very proud to do that. You know, why is that important to you, James? Because he waited to publish the book, waiting on my endorsement. So it means a lot. So I like to talk about it. Okay. There's always an outlier. Since I brought up that book, I just want to point you to chapter 2 in Building a Warehouse of Wealth, looking at a life insurance policy over a long period of time. I know I talked about this in part 2, and the man was paying $388 a year in premium, right? Which was a lot of money in 1959. But over a long period of time, the dividends became 10 times the premium. That's just the dividend. That's not the compounding, accumulating cash value. It's a cash value plus the dividend that creates the growing cash value. Anyway, I just want to point that out. Over a long period of time, maybe that's too long of a time period for us to think sometimes. All right, he got his first policy in 1945. All right, he kept buying life insurance. He bought the State Farm policy in 1959. All right, and then that's 14 years. And then 1959, and he kept buying policies, all right? But then, you know, from 1949, 1959 is 14 years. 1959, State Farm policy to changing the dividend election 15 years later, 1964. You know, that's a long time period, right? 14 years. And then going out even longer, here he is talking about his 1959 State Farm policy all the way up till, you know, 2019. Yeah, it's a long time. It's okay to think long term is what I want to point out. And then I talked a lot about basis. You know, the dividend adds to your basis. Your basis is not taxable. And then it would affect you later, withdrawals to basis and then loans maybe. Let me say that any kind of withdrawal from a policy above your basis is taxable, including the dividend. Right. So if I'm withdrawing from a life insurance policy and I receive a dividend, then it's taxable, right? Dividend is not taxable because it's a return of premium. It's being paid into the PUA. It's part of your basis. It grows. As soon as you withdraw above your basis on all life insurance, it's taxed in the year of receipt, ordinary income. There'll be another short series on taxation. Already got an outline. I'm all excited about it. Trying not to wander off the reservation, okay? So if you receive a withdrawal or a dividend above your basis, it's taxed at ordinary income, okay? All right. And then I want to make a point that, you know, I've talked about it a lot. Everybody has an opinion in the financial world. You know, everybody's got one. Nobody wants to hear it. Okay. Here, I want to be very clear. No rabbits, no digressions. All right. A life insurance company is not going to pay you to take a loan. A life insurance company is not going to pay you. They're not going to send you a check. They're not going to give you a dividend boost. They're not going to incentivize you to take a loan. Okay? I want to be very clear. And when you pay the loan, you're paying the life insurance company interest. That interest is not improving your individual policy. These are so fundamental and easily confused to the uninitiated. Okay? All right. And that's any kind of life insurance company, stock or mutual. They're not going to pay you or incentivize you to take a loan. And if they did, it would be through a very low interest rate, right? Okay. Yeah. You know, the idea of the low base premium, you know, the which produces a dividend that is not as powerful as a dividend on the PUA, and I gotta shorten my thinking. I'm struggling thinking long term, so I gotta focus on the short term, and I'm gonna enjoy all the results of my actions. Right, we all do. It reminds me if we were gonna go camping right out in the big wilderness, and you know I want to drink clean water, or I don't want to starve to death. You know I'm gonna have to have a fire. So, and just, it's an analogy. I get it. Makes sense to me. I hope you hear what I'm saying and what I'm communicating. If I want to have a fire, you know, I've got to go gather up all the wood. I got to pick the campsite. Here's where the fire is going to be. I'm going to go gather up some rocks or dig a hole or both to make sure the fire is contained. And then I got to go find the wood. I got to start the fire. And then I got to stoke it and keep it going. Now it's going. And before I even drink coffee, right? Now, it might be warm. I get it. But if I wanted to drink clean water, or I just wanted to drink coffee and not get sick and die, that's an awful lot of work, right? Water boils at 212 degrees. And as soon as it boils, Nelson talked about this many times, all of that effort, this is my analogy, all of that effort, gathering a fire, starting a fire, stoking it up, keeping it going, getting the water that I've got to boil, I've got to get that water to 212 degrees. Then it boils, then it becomes clean, right? Clean water was one of the greatest advancements in life expectancy. Just as a side note. Okay. Well, as soon as the water boils at 212 degrees, then it creates steam. And with steam, you can create a dynamo. It powers the whole Western United States at one time. All right. So my point here is that it takes some effort. It takes some thinking. It takes some work. It takes some discipline to pay the premium. The cash value is so powerful. You do not have to contort a policy in the early years. You don't. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And then I want to end here with recommended reading, you know, because I'm convinced, I've said it multiple times, I'll say it again, I'll continue to say it, I'm quoting Nelson, if you know what's going on, you will know what to do. And then I say, just educate yourself, just learn, you know, educate yourself. That's all very broad. I'm going to get very specific, and I have done this before, said where to go and when to go. You know, statement applies to you, the individual. If you know what's going on, you'll know what to do. And when it comes to the infinite banking concept, if you know what's going on, you'll know what to do. Well, maybe I'm not clear of what's going on. I don't know anything about the infinite banking concept. You know, and I'm going to share with you where to go. It applies to you if you own a policy. If you understand or you know what's going on with the mechanics of your life insurance policy, you'll know what to do, right? And I mean this in love and encouragement. And that's the very reason, understanding, knowing what's going on, you'll know what to do. So understanding what's going on, knowing what's going on, you know, I would encourage you to go to get the Banking with Life DVD. You can go to Banking with Life and rent it somewhere on there. You can go to NNI, Nelson Nash Institute, becomingyourownbanker.org, and you can buy it there. You can call our office. We'll ship it to you. I mean, we give a lot of them away. And then the Becoming Your Own Banker, Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, his first book. All right. Unlock the power of the infinite banking concept. And then his second book, Building a Warehouse of Wealth, a grassroots method of avoiding fractional reserve banking. Think about it. And then a third book, How Privatized Banking Really Works, Dr. Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, integrating Austrian economics with the infinite banking concept. And then Nelson's 6.5-hour DVD, video recording of himself giving a presentation, going right through his book. And I mean, that's powerful. You should own that. If you are practicing the infinite banking concept, if you're paying a premium, then you should have a cash value. If you have to borrow against your policy to buy these works, you should do that. And that's my encouragement. I don't care where you buy them, where you get them, but all of these will help you understand what's going on. And then my young friend, my dear friend, Ryan Griggs, How to Buy Whole Life, a framework for becoming your own banker. And then, you know, I'm working on it. I'll put together one or two books, but that's way out into the future sometime. These works are available for you to understand and grasp and understand and not only see what's going on, you'll see beyond what's going on. You'll see what to do about it. And let's say that you've never been exposed to this idea of controlling the banking function or becoming your own banker, and you spend $200, $250. I don't know what all that material would cost, but you know, let's say it costs $300 with shipping. I don't know. Okay. You can afford that. You're wasting more than $300 in a month, probably. Let's be honest. All right. You can afford it, is my encouragement. You can afford. Oh, wow, James, I don't like to read. Well, okay. You can still do it. Peruse it. I mean, just make an effort. Okay. Go to bankingwithlife.com. Go to our learning center. There are things in there that don't exist anywhere else. Go to the James Nethery YouTube channel. Over 700 videos. I get it. Some are short. I don't remember. There's a couple hundred shorts on there. There's some good content there. And I even hate using the word content. There's some good educational material there. All right. Clients in their own words. Over 50 of them. Or 20. I don't know. There's a lot of them. Over 50 Q&As. There's some specials in there. There's guests like Barry Dyke. He'll be on again, short order. You know, Ryan Griggs and I have gone through a series of a book reviewing Becoming Your Own Banker. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff there that you can listen to on your own time, right? If you like 1 minute sound bites, just stop the recording every minute, okay? It's okay. I'm convinced if you learn what's going on in the big wide world of savings, quote unquote, air quotes, investing, quote unquote, and banking, quote unquote, if you knew what was going on with your money, your investments, your savings, I think you might do something different. But if you knew what was going on, you would know what to do. Is my whole point there. And if you discovered, and that's just in the big wide world, if you learned what was going on with the fractional reserve banking system, if you learned what was really going on with Wall Street, Barry Dyke has a series of books. He's holed up now, coming out with working on a 2-volume set of what really goes on in Wall Street, right? So if you understand what's going on with fractional reserve banking, if you understand what's going on within the investment world, and you understand what's going on with money in general, then you would know what to do. Then if you understood what's going on in your personal economy, your money, the money that goes right through your hands, you know, the money that you're earning, trading your God-given abilities and talents for, yeah, away from your family, yeah, that money. Your investments, where you're putting that money, and what it's going to do for you over time. And then all of the financing that you do, which is everything that you purchase, you finance. When you understand broadly what's going on, you'll know what to do. And when you understand very refined, very narrowly within you and your personal economy, what's going on, you'll know what to do. And if you spent $300 buying all this material, reading it, perusing it, getting the message, and you thought it was a waste of time, well, you've wasted $300 many times in your life. I'm saying it's worth it, and go to the First Works. Okay. I will end it there. This is this will be part four, and all I was trying to do is kind of wrap up some loose ends that I felt existed in parts one, two, and three of Dividend. I had fun, and I hope you enjoyed listening. I hope it helps. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.